This conversation with Harry Sampson and Clarice Moody Sampson took place at their home in Moscow on August 16, 1976. The interviewer was Sam Schrager.
How we got hold of that, my sister had a friend in California, and she wrote, of course, and then she sent it up here so we could read it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get out now, so Harry, I'll talk to you.
Oh, I don't want you to leave, Clarice.
I can't tell you much.
I'm going to want to ask you some, too.
Oh, are you?
But, yeah, but what was the matter with blood on the tail of the pig?
Well, it's just the idea that blood on the tail of the pig that he saw in a vision, wasn't it, of some kind?
No,
I don't know. I never read it, so I don't know about it.
We aren't taping now, are we?
Yeah, I just turned it on. Whoa, don't stop talking.
I'm not sure, though, about this. You shouldn't say things.
Well, so you say...
Is that on now?
I just turned it on, yeah.
Oh. Well, I first met Dr. Robinson when he came to Moscow, came into the store, David's store, and Mr. David introduced me to him because he'd been interested in boys' scout work, too, and he thought perhaps I could use him in my scout work. And so that way I got acquainted with him. Well, Mr. David Robinson evidently came up here without any finances to speak of. He got this job at the
university.
The drugstore across the street, Charlie Bowles' drugstore. But he, Mr. David, in order to have a place to sleep, he furnished him a bed and blankets and whatnot in order to have a place to sleep. Well, it wasn't long after that that he got. I think there were six fellows. I know that George Benson was one, Oscar Anderson was one, and Anderson of the First National Bank.
Elmer Anderson.
How's that?
Elmer Anderson, yes.
And I don't know just how much they financed him to, but it must have been around $1,000 a piece. And it was through that capital that he got his psychiana going. Well, it just took like wildfire all over the world because he advertised in the Pathfinder magazine in Washington, D.C. And that had a world circulation. And orders came in. Well, I think he operated about 3 years. And he bought these fellows out. And then's when the money started coming in. And he started giving lectures. He'd go to Los Angeles, or he'd go back to New York and give a lecture. And through those lectures, he got more, sold more courses. And in these courses, living in Moscow, he would not sell them to anyone in Moscow. They had to be out of the city. Well, it wasn't long until he bought a home here with the money he had, put in a pipe organ. He was a musician too, as well, an organist. And then along the way, he got into trouble on his citizenship. He was a son of a Baptist minister up in Canada, and he came over into this country, and I don't know who dug it up on him, but he was not an American citizen, and so he had to leave the country, and he went to one of the islands, either Puerto Rico or Cuba or someplace in the islands there, and Senator Borah helped him and straightened the thing out for him. And he came back into the country and things were all right from then on. Well, the Moscow medical building right back of the First National Bank. He built that, and he had his office in there. Well, I was well enough acquainted with him. He only lived a block from us, and he invited me down one day to his office just to see what it was like. So I went in there, and he was telling me all about this citizenship setup that Bora took care of him on. Well, he says, I'll tell you another thing. He says, I've got a tape recorder underneath this desk. He says, anybody that comes in this office that I'm not sure of, he says, I turn that on because I'm not going to have them have anything on me. So he was very clever about that end of it. He wasn't going to be caught into another lawsuit or something. Well, it wasn't long after that that he just kind of threw money away there for a while in Moscow. He established Robinson's Lake out here. There was a group of men in town here thought that might be a pretty good resort place out there, and they'd build summer homes out there. Well, he got a hold of that, and he just beat him to that, and he bought that and turned it over to the county as a recreational area. Well, that was one thing. Well, then the newspapers were kind of tying into him a little here, the newspaper rather. So he decided that he was just going to run that paper himself. So he bought them out. And he owned the Star Mirror until he turned it over to the Idaho, or got Bill Marino from Elk River to come over here and edit the paper. So that's, and they changed the name to the Idahonian. Well, and there was another setup. He was a pharmacist, and he felt the pharmacists were more or less gouging the people with their prescriptions and their drugs and so on. So he opened up he bought a pharmacy, opened up where Walgreens is now, and he operated that until Whatchcullen took it over. So he was a promoter from way back.
You haven't told about the Italian setup.
Oh, when I was visiting him in his office, he was telling me about an Egyptian shah or a prince that had a son that was ill. And he'd been taking his course. He had 6 or 8 courses. And then after you took them, he started another list. He'd get them going on another one, so it kept the finance coming in. Well, anyway, this prince cabled him and told him about his son. He says, maybe you can do something for him. And I suppose he wrote him back that he had prayed for him and done this and that. And the son became well. It was a kind of a miracle to the prince. So the prince sent him a check, and if I'm not mistaken, it was $5,000 or $10,000. And Robinson told me that he sent that check right back to him and told him that the publicity that he would get on that would far outrank what he paid him. So that was one thing that's the unusualness about him in all his affairs.
What, did he seem sincere to you, Harry?
Oh, yes. Yes, I think that, I think he was sincere in his work because he and Drury used to have confabs. They were good friends, too. And Drury, told him that he was getting all his information from Mary Baker Eddy, and he revolved his science around Mary Baker Eddy. And he did. He had a lot of that. But Well, he was a smart, mother. And
what about the struggle with George Lanphier? Now, according to Robinson's book, Strange Autobiography, that book of his, he lays his troubles with the citizenship and all that on Lanphier and says that George Lanphier hated him so much that
Oh, yes.
He was after him.
Yes. Well, he owned the Star Mirror, the Moscow paper, and he was tying into him, and there was nothing he could say what was detrimental to Robinson. And then Robinson began thinking he'd take over the paper.
Well, I believe probably, you see, he had so much printing to do with all this, and I think probably they were just didn't agree about the printing or something. So that was when Dr. Robinson got
Bill Marino
to come from Elk River. He was running a little paper up there, and to start up a paper. And then, of course, for a while, both papers were just at each other all the time, you know. But it seemed strange and funny to us, because the Star Mirror finally combined with the other paper, because but Lanphier, I guess, was out of that, because Louis Boaz was editor for Lanphier, and then he went in.
That was in the deal, that when Lanphier sold it, he had to take Louis Boaz over as the editor. And he was with the Ideonian up until 4 or 5 years ago.
And they did all the printing then for
Psychiatra. Well, what I wonder about is why Lanphier disliked him so much, as Robinson indicated in the book, that it was largely because of the printing.
I think so.
And that's what caused him to. And he said that Lanphier was charging him twice what Bill Marino said it would cost.
Mm-hmm.
So that he felt he was getting gouged by Lanphier.
Well, he took over the Queen City Printing Company. That's where he did his printing. That's where Bill Marino took charge there. Then that got to be too small, and he opened up a building up where the Weisel Insurance Company is now. And he must have employed 10, 12 people up there.
Well, he changed the rating of our post office here in Moscow, the rank of our postage office.
Make it number one.
With the amount of the mail he sent out.
Well, to what extent do you think there was religious opposition to him because of his seemingly anti-denominational views?
Well,
indirectly, I think they were against him, but speaking from the pulpit, they weren't.
Oh, well, I think some churches were, Harry, because they thought it was just an ism of some kind. But his wife and his son and daughter came to the Presbyterian Church. They were all members, but still they were in on Psychiana too. So he had that tie, because when his daughter would appear in Sunday school pageants and so on, why, Dr. Robinson always came. But there was one thing about Dr. Robinson. He did an awful lot for poor people. And at Christmas time, they said the number of sacks of flour and turkeys and things that he distributed over Lake Talkaddy was amazing. And he never boasted about it. It was never told how much he was doing.
Well, you know, when the Presbyterian Church built their new church, he pledged money to build the tower of the church, Presbyterian Church. Now, I think he did it because his wife was a member of the church. He didn't give it, no.
Not that much, no.
Well, that was the thing that was brought up. Then He was down in San Francisco. I heard this indirectly, of course. And it came to him that the church were not just satisfied to have him build that or pay for that tower. And he withdrew his pledge. I heard that, yes. Yes, that was a fact.
This this charity that he gave to people, poor people, was it more than just at Christmas time?
Oh, yes, I think he was charitable the whole year. I think he did for people. But I think Christmas was a big time that he just wanted to help people.
Were these names that where people would go, do you think, directly to
him? I don't know how he handled it. That was before the days of Christmas baskets and so on. He just had his own Christmas donations that he made.
And he didn't try to capitalize on that?
Not to my knowledge at all. Because a lot of people don't even know that Dr. Robinson did. I want to tell you one thing, though. We had been in Dearborn, Michigan, and out to Greenfield Village, and our car was rifled there, and we drove away from Greenfield Village feeling that the police weren't doing much about it. And we landed that night in Green Rivers. Where was it?
It was in northern Michigan.
Northern Michigan, a little town. And pouring rain, and we didn't know where we were going to stay. Well, we saw this guest house. So we went to the door and told her there were three of us, our son was with us, that we wanted a place to stay overnight. And so she greeted us and had us come in. It was a nice home, spiral stairway, and a very pretty home. And the minute Harry registered in her guest book, she saw Moscow, Idaho, and she said, "Do you happen to know Dr. Robinson, Dr. Frank Robinson?" And Harry told her, yes, he was a neighbor of ours. Well, right away, we were the most welcome guests you ever saw, because she was such a firm follower of him.
Yes, she were taking the course.
But when she saw that Moscow, Idaho, she just and I, we told her, we saw him every day go past our house, and that his daughter and our son went to the same birthday parties and so on. Oh, she just was so interested.
Well, wasn't there another incident where he helped? There were some youngsters lost out here around Robinson's Lake.
I think so.
And he hired a helicopter to come in here and hunt those kids.
Or a plane or something. Mm-hmm.
What about the fact that so a lot of people seem to think that he wasn't sincere? I mean, there are people that have the idea that he was in it just for money, and that he, when I look at those books of his, I think this man must have believed what he was saying, because it seems so heartfelt to me what he's saying. But there are people that just seem to feel that he couldn't have been sincere.
Well, when you read this book, that the first one he got out explaining what Psychiana was, you would say he was sincere about it.
Well, what makes me dubious about his sincerity was that he made, I don't know what position Mrs. Robinson had in his setup.
A bishop.
And his son had a certain thing and a title. And in order to do that, they could escape paying a lot of tax.
Yes, it was a religious organization. Of course, when he passed away, that's when she was made a bishop. And then the son was supposed to take over. He was a graduate of Stanford University. He had a good education. And the son run it for maybe a year or two, and he couldn't go along with it, I guess, and he wouldn't sell it. He could have sold it for thousands of dollars. There was a concern in St. Louis who wanted to take it over, and he wouldn't sell it, and he just simply closed it out and closed it. And no one has ever had access to it. It died with Robinson.
But all of it is at the University of Idaho, all of that.
Well, does that...
I don't know whether it's open research.
It will be. I think it's about a 25-year limit on it. So,
if you want to contact, he has a the girl out here. The daughter is she a daughter? Alfred's daughter.
Alfred's daughter is here.
You could probably get some information from her too. She lives right out here someplace on an acreage.
Well, Alfred. Do you think he had been a follower before that, or do you think he just tried to?
I think he tried to. I hate to say these things.
Well, it's the historical truth. I think it's important.
It made Alfred all... He just became almost an alcoholic because he didn't want to go along with that, and he felt he owed it to his father or something. So then he, after he would have nothing more to do with the Idahoan, why, he sold advertising for the Idahoan. They owned the stock still, he and his mother, you see. And finally, though, when Mrs. Robinson moved to California, we know that she sold her stock to the firm as is now, because Mr. Marino told it so.
Is that, do you know... What made them decide they didn't want to stay any longer? Do you think it's...
Well, her health. She needed to be in a warmer climate. And both of her... Alfred was still here at that time when Mrs. Robinson moved to California, but the daughter lived away from here. And now Mrs. Robinson is living in Texas with her daughter. And I think Florence's husband... has retired. He was a career man in the army, and but they like it in Texas. And but Mrs. Robinson is a cripple from arthritis. Mm-hmm. She remarried in California, Mrs. Robinson, and we visited them in their apartment. Went to call on them at where was it?
Well, it's
near Monterey, there someplace, in Carmel.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And we went to call on them, and she seemed much better to us then, but after her second husband died, I guess her health went downhill quickly.
Did you know her very well?
Oh, yes. She was a most charming woman. A most charming woman. And she was delightful to visit with, and had a good mind, and she was a great worker in the Eastern Star, I know, but she was just a most charming person. And she was a great daughter of the American Revolution member.
Came from Klamath Falls, Oregon. Mm-hmm. Where she...
Her father was a judge or something at Klamath Falls.
That's what I read. Mm-hmm. She, according to him, she was really a steadfast helper to him, that she really helped him a great deal, is what he said.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm sure she never grumbled or anything. She just wasn't that kind of a person, I don't believe. But she was a most pleasing person to be with.
Well, he was a family man. He sure... did everything in the world for his wife and his son and daughter.
Harry used to measure him for suits, custom-made suits. And he got one time, a blue suit with a white stripe through it, you know. And he liked it so well, he ordered another one just like it. He was very particular.
Yeah, he
said... a wide rimmed Stetson or something always.
He sent me a picture after I sold him that suit with his daughter on his lap. There's a picture about this big, and he gave me one of them. You gave it back to...
I gave it
to the daughter.
For Mrs. Robinson to give to one of the grandchildren.
And he liked that suit so well that he ordered a second one just like it. Hmm. Here's another thing that, speaking about his going, he told me that he says any time he wanted to raise $3,000-$4,000, all he had to do is give a lecture someplace, and Los Angeles was an awful good place to do that. Well, he gave lectures in a lot of places, but the first suit that I sold him quite early in his Psychiana.
This story's bad.
No, it isn't. He was giving a lecture back in Rochester, New York, and it's when the zippers first came out in men's suits and the trousers. And they didn't lock at the top, and you just rolled it up there, and if you wear it out like this, you know, and he did that when he did his speaking, he wear it out back like that, and he says that zipper started coming down, and a fellow had to call his attention to it.
Well, I thought he got his shirt caught in it then.
No, that was somebody else.
He was a big man.
Yeah, he's about 6 foot one tall, I guess.
And handsome.
195 pounds, somewhere around there.
We used to see him walk to his office every day past our house.
Oh, mm-hmm.
I heard that he was very outgoing, very forthright, forceful. Is that true? In the way he spoke?
I never heard him speak.
Well, just in conversation. Like,
well, I didn't ever have conversation. I harried him, but was he very outgoing in his conversation, Eric?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I would say so.
I never did visit with Dr. Olmeyer speaking.
Well, we were pretty good friends. I know one day I was working out in the yard. We lived in the corner of 3rd and Polk, and a fellow came by with a bouquet in his hand of roses. And he says, "Can you tell me where Doc Robinson lives?" And I says, "Yes, he's just around the corner here." Well, he says, "I want to present him with this bouquet." He had read a lot about Doc Robinson, and he wanted to meet him. So what he had in his Psychiana courses took with a lot of people. It must have been convincing to a lot of people.
I have the impression that it was, and I'm interested if I had a chance to study some of the materials that they have, the letters that mm-hmm. they got. I'd be interested to try to get a feeling for what kind of people subscribed to his teaching. What if there were certain types of people? Because they were from all over, weren't they?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's always people looking for, that are not quite satisfied with the religion that they're, or church that they're connected with. And he had something in those lectures that appealed to him, and those are the people that went along with him. Now, Vincent Peale of New York City got his material. He told me that too. He may have taken out of curiosity to see if there was anything in it that he could use in his preaching.
Well, I think that was Dr. Drury's fort with mm-hmm. Dr. Robinson. He was just interested to know what he felt and how he was doing his teaching. I don't think he was for him or against him. I think it was just an interest in knowing.
Well, Dr. Drury was this type of a preacher. He was always wanting to delve into things. And there was one winter that he had preachers of every church in town on a Thursday night come up. We had a Thursday night group. And explain their particular church history and their philosophy and so on. And He even got a Catholic priest there.
That was before they did that.
Was this at the Presbyterian Church that this took place?
It was at the Presbyterian Church.
And anyone could come and hear this?
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to those meetings?
Yes.
We did. And that's why he accused Psychiana of copying Mary Baker Eddy. That's where he based his whole Psychiana on.
Dr. Drury was all for research, and he'd researched everything.
Yeah.
Well, Robinson claimed in the Strange Autobiography that Drury had helped dissuade some of the ministers in Moscow from ganging up on him, because Drury had said, if there's something behind this movement, it'll succeed no matter what you do, and if it's not, it'll fail by itself. He said Drury stuck up for him that way.
Well, yes.
That seemed likely?
Very likely. I mean.
Well, you know, I always feel like we had a Mrs. Sargent that was a German teacher at the college, and she filled the pulpit at the Presbyterian Church a couple of Sundays, and I'll never forget, she made this statement: it didn't make any difference what religion, or no, there's good in all forms of religion, regardless of whether it's Mohammedism or Buddhism or what it is, as long as they have a moral standard. And I've always remembered that, because when you go to criticizing a lot of, like, Jehovah's Witnesses and all those, they have a certain moral standard that's...
Well, they appeal to some people that something of a different nature would not satisfy those people.
And I think Drury's stand was pretty much that. He thought there was a certain amount of good in all of them.
Do you think that Dr. Robinson had high personal standards himself? That he was a very moral person, Robinson?
Well, as far as any contact I ever had with him, and the things he did in Moscow, he couldn't help but be.
I think he was.
Because he had... He was for the anybody that needed help. He was there to do it, and that's a big part of religion.
The drugstore deal, where he started his own drugstore. Do you think there was a case to be made for what he was saying, that prices were higher than they could have been?
Sure, that's the only reason he started it. He was going to put the other drugstores out of business.
Because he thought they were gouging.
Yeah, no question about it. Yeah, he would have bought every drugstore in town here eventually.
What happened? Did it work?
Well,
I think he got too involved in Psychiana.
In Psychiana.
Mm-hmm. Not probably.
Did he ever try to talk to you about religion? And about his ideas?
No.
Never did.
Never did. He didn't try to sell me on it at all. He just told me what he was doing. What is it accomplishing?
I think he probably liked to get a good audience. Someone who would listen to his point of view.
When he told you what he was accomplishing, was that mostly... insofar as the growth of his movement and how he was getting big?
That's right. Yes, it's... Because he was just going to town there for a while.
Well, I'll tell you, when I read him, I get this impression, and I don't know... Sometimes I read him, and I feel this guy is more self-centered than, you know, much more so than most people that I've known, because he's talking himself up big. And then sometimes I feel that he's really humble, because he's kind of talking himself down.
No, I think your first judgment is the one.
Yeah.
He was an egotist, I guess you'd say.
Mm-hmm.
wouldn't you? Very much so. And I think...
But he was not an open egotist.
Yeah.
Because he no more just spoke to me. He had conversation with you, but I never had a speck of conversation with him.
Mm-hmm. Well, he, I imagine one thing he took a liking to me is that I listened. And he wanted somebody to tell the things he was doing.
Well, I think he was building himself up a little.
Yeah.
Well, it comes across in his writings that he has a very, and he seems kind of stubborn. When he tells about some of the ways that he reacted to people who were opposing him, it sounds as if he was pretty stiff-necked. And if you crossed him, that he wouldn't take it lying down.
No, mm-hmm. Well, that's right.
And I think that's one reason he didn't want his literature out in the town of Moscow. Because he felt there was enough opposition against him.
He was a member. He was a member of Kiwanis Club.
He was.
Yeah. We took him in as a member. I won't tell you the rest of it, but.
I didn't know that.
What was I thinking? Oh, I had the idea that maybe he didn't spread his teaching here partly because he didn't want to arouse too much opposition among the churches. I mean, wouldn't he have been competing with the different churches then?
No, I don't know that he was.
No, I mean,
if he had
sold his teachings in Moscow, then he might have been drawing people away from the other churches.
That could have been, yes. He had a reason for not selling Moscow people, all right.
And with his help, if they did any discussion of the amount of material that went out or anything in the material, they just were fired right then.
He didn't want them discussing...
No, he didn't want any of his help discussing any of his business.
Yep. It was a closed affair.
When he occupied the building up there at the corner of First and Main, that was when he had so many girls working in the offices. But he turned the second floor into a youth center. And I thought that was nice. That was the first youth center Moscow had. And then when he built the medical building there on 3rd Street, well, that building was bought and taken down, and for a while the youngsters didn't have any youth center, any place to go. And then somebody started one up over Carter's drugstore in a room up there for them. And that ran for several years, and finally that was closed up. But he did open the first youth center for children in Moscow.
See, our son was how old then?
Oh, David never went to that youth center. I don't think he wasn't.
Yes,
he went to the one over Carter's drugstore. He was too young when that building was up there on First and Main.
What about his friendship with Bill Marino? In the book, in Strange Autobiography, it sounds like he counted Bill Marino as one of his real friends and associates.
They were very close. They were very close, I know. Mm-hmm. Because we know the Marinos so well, and I'm sorry you can't talk to Mr. Marino now.
Well, I had the impression that if what Robinson said was true, that Mr. Marino must have thought pretty well of him.
Well, it
because
was
they were
good job.
Robinson's fellow that put Marino on the map.
It started him out.
Marino was in this little town of Elk River up here running a weekly paper.
And the mill had shut down, too, at that time.
Mm-hmm. So that...
Well, that was...
He owes a lot. Marin owes a lot.
That was in the Depression. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the 30s.
Yeah.
Because in the trial, did you remember that trial here in Moscow in 1930s? Do you remember that trial here in Moscow in 1936? He had that trial for the passport. There was a trial right here in town as a federal court. I looked at the newspaper stories on it, and he had a lot of people testifying as to his character.
Mm-hmm.
And he was acquitted. And then the Immigration Bureau took it up.
Yeah.
And they put the heat on him.
Mm-hmm.
But he came to trial here. And I thought Marino was one of them that stood by him.
He probably was. He probably was.
I wouldn't be surprised that the paper had something to do about bringing that before the old Starkmere.
He thought so, I know.
Of course, Lamphere was just as much Lamphere way as Robinson was Robinson way. They were both strong.
Yeah, what was Lamphere like?
I never knew Mr. Lamphere very well, but he sure was a tough customer, I guess.
Well, he came from this little town of Palouse up over here. I don't know whether he's running a paper there or what. But the paper was for sale, and he bought it. And Pete Arkett was his first editor, you remember. And and then when we started the golf course out here, he was one of the directors of it. And I know I went out to play golf one morning, and they needed the fourth. I went out alone. And he says, come on, play with us. And I says, all right. And I found out they played nickel a hole. Well, I never gambled in golf in my life. And I says, well, I haven't even got any money with me at all. Well, he says, I'll back you up. So the first five holes, it was costing him, I was losing, and it was costing me money. But when we finished playing golf, I paid him back and had money. So I'm sure he always remembered that. Oh, he was a kind of a boisterous fellow. He's a loud talker. I remember the women's business club here in Moscow. They invited him to speak. He was president of the Chamber of Commerce that year. And he got up and gave him a talk. He says, I want you women to know that the Chamber is back at you. Well, you know, that got to be a joke as a chamberman. Which is pretty good.
Well, Robinson accused him of being a drunkard, among other things. Robinson accused Lamphere of drinking.
He was a drinker, you betcha.
Heavy drinker.
Yes, he was. Yes, he had to have his cocktail every day.
Cocktail? It was more than a cocktail.
Yeah. Yes, he probably had it in his desk.
Well, do you think that Lamphere was a very obstinate... You think Lamphere was a very obstinate man? Would he be the type that would start something?
Well, he was strong-headed. Whatever he went out for, he just went out all out. And he'd get just all head up about it. I've seen him pretty hot.
He used a lot of profanity, I think, in his...
You remember anything he ever got mad about?
Oh, he'd get mad and playing golf, of course. He'd get a hook a ball, you know, and
Are you talking about Lamphere or Robinson?
Lamphere.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to figure out what kind of character he had, because I'm wondering how accurate Robinson's view of him would have been. Because Robinson really thought that he had kind of started it against him.
Well, of course, the whole feud between Lamphere and Robinson was over getting Bill Maron over here at the Queen City Printing Company. And then the Star Mirror wasn't getting in the printing. And that's where the feud started. And then when Robinson started with a motion of buying him out.
Of course, I don't know what they call the paper. There was a Star Mirror, and what was the Marino paper first called?
That was the News Review.
News Review. Well, that didn't have the circulation or anything, of course, that the Star Mirror did, because the Star Mirror was a combination of the Moscow Star and something else from way back when. And I think there was a great deal of rivalry between the newspapers on the advertising. And, but that sort of amused us when the Star Mirror could be purchased by the lesser paper, you know, when that time came that Lamphere was ready to...
I thought Lamphere died before...
I believe he did, probably, and it was his family who sold the paper. But Louis Boaz, of course, and Montgomery had some interest in the Lamphere paper.
Well, Harry,
I believe.
Do you think that the business community in general, do you think that the business community supported Robinson or would stand by him, or do you think they were very divided about whether he was
I think that's true.
A good man or not?
I don't think the downtown is for him very strong. And that may have been one reason why he wouldn't sell any
material there. Well, I think why the town wouldn't go along with him, they didn't know what it was all about.
Mm-hmm.
I think it worked both ways.
Mm-hmm. No, I think he was a kind of a loner as far as business is concerned.
Did Homer David remain a friend?
Yes.
To him?
I was. You bet.
Well, he was a good customer of David's, I might say.
Well, they were good friends.
It sounds as though in the Depression that Robinson gave a lot of women work.
I think so.
Because
he
of
did.
His business.
But he did. I think that's true. Mm-hmm. Because he employed many women. They starting in arranging these courses. I don't know, but I can't think of right now anyone who worked for him, whether I knew any. One or not, but I knew that it was very hush-hush what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, did people actually speak out against him that you knew, Harry, downtown?
Oh, I think you heard a good deal about this tale of the blood on the tail of a pig. That kind of, like
was
it was
so
a
silly.
Fairy tale or something.
Yeah.
I think that hurt him some as far as the Moscow people were concerned. Because that got out, you know.
Well, that was his first book about, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a simpy thing. I read it, but I don't remember much about it. But to me, it was just so, like you say, kind of a fairy tale sort of thing that it didn't have much weight, I wouldn't think.
I think he took a little exception of the Bible and some of the miracles, but some of the people never, and we don't yet understand a lot of them ourselves.
What I read, he seemed to be saying that he didn't think that Jesus that Jesus Christ was divine, but rather that he was a human.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore he thought that Christianity hadn't been telling the truth and were leading mm-hmm. people away from mm-hmm. God rather than to God. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. I'm just reading this recently, but that's what I thought he was mm-hmm. saying.
Well, did he say anything about the virgin birth?
I don't think he believed in it.
I don't think he did, no.
So I think...
But there are a lot of people that don't believe in that yet today, as far as that goes. As far as we're concerned,
Harry,
it's just all on faith.
Just stop right there now.
It's just all on faith as far as...
You don't have to expound on your beliefs on this.
Well, that's true.
It seems to me, though, that Robinson was, you know, he said that he was always driving places to help people, and if they were sick, at least he had in the earlier years. He would drive 1,000 miles to Portland and back, and he claimed a lot of healing by faith, uh-huh. that people who had faith in Psychiana would mm-hmm. become well, a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sure this woman where we stopped in Michigan.
He had the first Duesenberg car in this section. I don't know whether he bought it over in Germany or what, but it was a big car.
I always wondered what that car was. I've heard people say he had one and they didn't know what kind it was.
Sure he did. He was proud of the thing. It was just like one of the family.
He kept it beautifully, I know.
You remember seeing it, don't you?
Well, he kept it so beautiful.
Yeah.
I guess he didn't believe that a religious leader needs to live in poverty.
No, indeed. This organ in that home was a huge theater organ, you know, that he had rebuilt into his...
The organ's still in the house. It was sold along with the house. Coonrod lives in the house now. Vice president.
But the organ doesn't work. The organ doesn't work.
Doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. And it's to find somebody who knows how to fix it, and the cost is prohibitive.
Mm-hmm.
Did he? I have heard people say that he used to walk around the streets, and he would stand on a street corner sometimes and have a little conversation with God. Did you ever know of him doing that, walking around?
We just saw him stride by our home every morning going to his office.
Did he wear a big hat?
Uh-huh. That's what I told you a while ago, a wide-brimmed hat.
Oh.
I remember so well because I have a picture the day David and Jack Marino started the public school. And we wanted to take their pictures. They started off to school the first morning. And Dr. Robinson was walking by our house just when the children were starting out. And he is in the background in the picture.
Oh.
Do you think that he was a lonely fellow, a lonely person? I somehow get the idea if he was kind of cut off from a lot of local life here.
Well, he was.
So, I think so. Mm-hmm.
I think so.
You never met him out at any gathering, but I did. I just thought maybe he didn't care about such.
Mm-hmm. Was he buried out here in the sun?
I don't know.
I don't
can't
know
remember.
Either.
I doubt it. I don't even remember the circumstances of his death.
He had a coronary, I think.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I think it was a coronary.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Did he ever talk about his past life? I guess he had a pretty dissipated life before he found...
He did to Homer David. I never heard any of his past. All I know about it is what Homer David told me.
He said he was an alcoholic for...
No.
He said he himself said he was.
I think so, Harry.
Robinson was not.
Not in Moscow.
No, way back before when he was lost.
Well, this is something I wouldn't want to be printed at all, but the reason he came to Moscow, he was an oil promoter down in Los Angeles, and he was doing it over radio. And boy, that's why he had to leave. He was kind of railroaded out of California. He was promoting oil stock, and it wasn't his Wildcat stuff.
And
that's one reason why he left down there.
Did Homer David say that?
Mm-hmm.
So he had told that to Homer David.
Mm-hmm.
That's something he doesn't talk about in his book.
Yeah. Well, that's why I wouldn't want to come out here. But that was his difficulty. But having become to Moscow and in such a short time build up Psychiana and become, well, I don't think he's particularly wealthy. I think he gave away too much. And when he passed away,
they owned the stock in the newspaper.
Most of the funds was what Psychiana brought in.
Of course, we're off now. This isn't being taped.
So. Oh, no.
Well, I just know studying over at Pullman filled our pulpit for several Sundays, and I wasn't there at that particular service, but in his sermon he was making statements about the country and so on, just generalizing, and she stood up and she said, "You can't talk that way here." She said, "I won't listen to it." And she just up and walked out of the church. And that was so different than you'd expect.
That's something to do with patriotism.
It was something about the country that she didn't like what he was saying. But that was so different than Mrs. Robinson, you know, to stand up in church and make her statement and walk out. People admired her for it, and a lot of people didn't agree with what this young man was saying, but she had the courage, fortitude to stand up and say, "I won't listen to you talk like that. I'm going to leave," and she left.
Well, that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she was left enough money that when she left Moscow for this place down at Monterey, we visited her. It was a retirement setup, and it was a lovely, lovely place, and I'm sure she must have had to pay $400 or $500 a month down there.
I think
and then when she introduced us to the man that she married finally, and the reason they got together, he had an apartment and she had an apartment, and says, "Well, why don't we go together and save one cost of an apartment?" And that's how they happened to get married. They were both taking some of the same medicines and things of that type.
Well, he said the Lavoris or something.
What?
He teased her. He said she bought a small size Lavoris and he bought the giant size, so they saved money on the Lavoris.
It was a lovely place down there. So she was
she
able to.
She seemed so happy too.
Yeah.
But he died and then she left California.
He was a merchant marine,
mm-hmm.
a retired merchant marine.
Did she, do you think she would mind, do you think she still thought a lot about her first husband and
I don't think
Moscow?
So. No, I don't think so.
How old do you think Mrs. Robinson is now? About 80?
I judge so.
Mm-hmm.
She sounds like a very interesting person.
Well, she was. She was a lovely person. I just don't know any more ladylike person I've ever known than Mrs. Robinson. Very gracious and
always pleasant.
Always pleasant. But she didn't entertain, and I just imagine that was because he didn't go along with that probably. I think he was a Sardis home as his castle, and he wanted it to be that way.
Yes, I guess they didn't have many acquaintances or social life. Mm-hmm. Oh.
Only she was a great Eastern star.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that his work was his life, besides his family? Did he spend? I have heard it said that he spent an awful lot of time working on Psychiana. Mm-hmm. That he devoted.
Well, he was a meditator.
I think that was
about as near as I could explain him. This new meditation program is on now. I think that's where he got his inspiration, just meditating. He evidently went back to Washington and he had to have a passport to get out.
But if Bora, my idea is that if Bora hadn't supported him, he would have been deported.
Uh-huh.
That's what it sounds like. Uh-huh. Bora saved him.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Bora must have believed that he was a good man, or I don't imagine he would have done that, you know.
It would be interesting. I don't know why Bora would take that attitude toward him, but I can remember that. Of course, if they deported him, he wouldn't have had a passport to re-enter the...
Re-enter, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've forgotten how long he was gone. He was gone quite a while.
Several months,
yeah.
I think.
Well, he had a statement from Bora in which Bora said that he wouldn't care who it was if he thought something was being done against
mm-hmm.
one of his constituents
mm-hmm.
in Idaho, he would help
mm-hmm.
him.
And I think Bora was that kind of a man. He would.
Was he active, Robinson, in the Republican Party? He said he was a Rock River Republican. In his book.
I
wonder if
forgotten politically how he stood.
I know he was against the New Deal, and he was
mm-hmm.
a Republican. I just wondered if he was active in politics.
Well, I don't know. I wasn't.
I don't remember him ever promoting anybody at all.
Maybe that was some of the closeness between he and Bill Marino, that they
mm-hmm.
were both such staunch Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
He said he'd been approached and asked to run for the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
But he said no.
I don't think Bill Marino has always been a Republican. I think they were Democrats before.
Oh, I don't think so. He was representative from Elk River.
Well, that's afterwards, but I think the family were Democrats. His family. His folks.
Oh, you know, talking about strange things from the past that reminded me, did you ever know anything of Klan, Ku Klux Klan activities in
only
that?
What I've read.
Because there were in, I don't know if they were, did anything in Moscow, but in some of these small little towns like Elk River, for instance, around in the 20s,
well,
there were some people running around with the sheets.
Oh,
and
I never knew that. There were IWWs, though.
Oh, I've heard about them,
oh,
too.
But I don't remember.
We never had, as far as I know, we never had any sheet parades here.
I think it's some of the little towns. And I think that some of the people who were active were Southerners, too.
Uh-huh.
I think maybe it's something they brought out from the South,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know.
Well, the only thing now, the Birch Society, you know, there's a few Birches around here.
I think our young people are home.
Huh?
I think I hear our young people coming home.
Oh, they've been away for 10 days.
They'll be surprised to see the car out there.
Mm-hmm. He's driving a Jeep.
We hadn't been biffed when they left.
What are you going to do?
What they were interested in when they were around about 14 years old. And then I followed them through And when they were around 16, 17, why, entirely different. And they were interested in aviation at that time, because that was a big field. They were, most of them wanted to be aviators. There's only one fellow that I can remember, and that's Louis Orlin. On that first, he wanted to be a lawyer. And he, it's because his grandfather was a lawyer. And he became a lawyer, and he was he was head of the law school in the Gonzaga University up here until 3-4 years ago. And
of course,
he turned it down, and he's an instructor again.
Of course, in that family, it was the elder family of Orleans that were going to make Lewis's father a lawyer,
yeah,
and he wouldn't
that.
Go along with them. He bought a hardware store, became a hardware man here in Orleans, here in Moscow.
But,
Lewis,
whatever is popular at the age, around that age, the kids want to be. But they, oh yes, one wanted to be an architect, I remember, the session boy.
Oh.
And he turned out to be an educator. This first scout troop I had, I followed through with a lot of those kids, and you'd be surprised how they're up in the money today. Doctors, lawyers, insurance, one of them's vice president of New York Life. another one, Bell Laboratory, scientist for them. Frank David was a doctor. Kirk David was a doctor.
Gee, I wonder if scouting had something to do with getting them on their way.
Well, I think it helped a lot. It's a character building program. And then, of course, our merit badge program had incentives in different fields.
Kids didn't have so many diversions then as they do now, too, and those kids, scouting was their big thing.
And this one boy, Harold Waters, he became, he took entomology at the university, and he got to collecting bugs. He was chasing all over the country here with a net, and he had a wonderful collection of bugs that he showed me, had them all pinned on boards and so on. And he wound up with the Sherman Williams Paint Company because of the field that he was taking. And he had a good job with them, but he was killed in an automobile accident.
You know, there's one thing. I know I should get going because it's 6 and Laura expects me home. But I was just thinking about talking about Robinson, you were saying that you didn't think he was very well, really all that well to do. He didn't have all that much money. But it occurs to me that his movement, didn't they make an awful lot of money in all that mailing? And
yeah, but spent a lot too.
Yes, he spent a lot. He was...
And I think his charity cost was a lot too.
It was a big item.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So,
and then, of course, buying the paper. And
of course, too, he didn't pay very much for his help in those days because the people, women were so tickled to death to have a job. They picked peas in Moscow or worked for Psychiana. That was the big employment. And they'd come in from Troy and around the countryside to work.
But besides that, they did spend a lot on themselves too.
Well, yes, they had a nice home, and the family were well dressed. Alfred, Harry said, was Stanford. He was, but he went to Oberlin first. He was
music.
He was, that's where he should have been. And when he was forced into this, felt that he was obligated to take it over, why he drank heavily. And then his wife started drinking, and that particular part of the Robinson family just went from bad to worse. And
you think that he and his father were fairly close when he was
I doubt it.
I just thought that little Florence was the apple of Dr. Robinson's eye, and I think Mrs. Robinson and Alfred were very close, but I just doubt if Dr. Robinson was ever very close to Alfred. Mm-hmm. I just doubt it. Mm-hmm. Alfred just, well, he just didn't go along with Psychiana. That's all there was to it.
I wonder what his thinking was if he was willing to try.
I think that was just probably because of his mother that he was going to try to carry on because it would have been, he was smart to stop when he did and shut it out. And like Harry said, he didn't want to take any money for it. And as I understand, all that is at the university now. It was turned completely over.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it's...
And Alfred finally just left Moscow because he was just unhappy here.
You think the memories of
I think so. I think it bothered Alfred. I judge Alfred. It was a very sensitive young man, and he played our church organ for several years. And I used to talk to him a lot about music. And I think he just couldn't go along with that. And it just got him, and so finally they just up and sold everything and left. And then...
He probably could have made a go of it if he had wanted to.
If he'd been interested, but there was no interest there. To me, it's a lot of hooey. I'm not on the air now.
Actually, you were, but it doesn't matter. It's hooey, it's hooey.
That's what, to me, Psychiana is. It was just one of those things that... it was a get-rich proposition for Dr. Robinson. And it satisfied his ego, and he was a big man when he went... because I know this friend of my sister's, she'd watch the papers, and this big ad had come out in the Los Angeles papers, you know, that there'd be a big, he'd rent the Coliseum or whatever they had in Los Angeles and fill it, you know. Just like any simple person. He had a following.
Did it put Moscow on the map? It seems like it got Moscow a lot of publicity. Maybe that Moscow didn't want, but...
Well, I don't know about that. I just know he raised the rating of the post office here. But I don't know...
In all his ads, he said, you know, he wrote to Moscow.
Of course it went up. But I know the minute we signed the woman's guest book, Moscow, that just rang a bell that quick with her. And
do you think he believed in it, Clarice?
I don't know. I never knew him well enough to know.
Harry seems to think.
I think so. And I think maybe Dr. Drury, from little things he said, felt that Dr. Robinson was sincere in his what he had written. But I never read anything, only the blood on the tail of a pig, and I can't even remember much about it, so it seemed such a far-fetched thing when I read it. It was just kind of something funny to read to me.
Do you think that people were ashamed of having him around here?
Oh, no, I don't think that. Mm-mm. No, I don't think that at all. But I just... What do you see?